Kia ora, welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson. Once again, New Zealand has found itself under alert level restrictions after a positive case at Papatoetoe High School resulted in more infections in the community. At the point Cabinet made the decision, there was no clear link to the known cases. So word started going out last Saturday night, ministers were meeting and a lockdown media conference at Parliament was likely. At 9 o'clock, Jacinda Ardern once again fronted the Beehive Theatreette to deliver the news. Another level 3 lockdown would be put in place for Auckland for 7 days and level 2 for the rest of the country.
We are in the unfortunate but necessary position of needing to protect Aucklanders once again.
This latest outbreak had its origins in the Valentine's Day outbreak. Basically, case A, the daughter in the first family and a student at the school, passed it on to another student, it's not known how, and from there it spread to 2 other families. At the time of the lockdown, there were 15 known cases and 4 families involved. When Cabinet made the decision to put Auckland into lockdown, the connection had not yet been made to the known cases, with the most recent one, that of a 21-year-old MIT student whose actions were to come under the spotlight.
Yes, so my understanding is they visited the GP in the afternoon and had the test, and I think, and the information I have is that they went to the gym after they had the test.
The focus would be not on just the student, but the actions of a number of families. One key transmission was when the mother of a second student who picked up the virus from Papatoetoe High School went for a walk while infectious during level 3 with another mum and passed it on. The other mum who went for a walk passed it on to her 21-year-old son, and that was the mystery connection officials had been looking for, as she and her son had had no obvious connection to the school. Another family's been the subject of intense debate. They ended up with several infections and in quarantine. They had 2 students at Papatoetoe High School, one in Year 10 and an older sister who never went back after the school closed earlier in the month and went to work at Kmart. Most of the debate's been over a third sister who went to work at KFC the night before her sister tested positive and the family was moved into quarantine. Another point of contention was the family had been very hard to get hold of when the outbreak first happened, so it took some time to get them tested, which then revealed positive cases. Dr. Bloomfield described the situation to Morning Report's Susie Ferguson.
There are repeated phone calls made. In the case of one of these families, there were, I think, 10 to a dozen phone calls made over several days. But we also, of course, did have in place this requirement that kids needed to have been tested before they went back to school. They need to have returned a negative test. And by the time the school first reopened last Monday, around 98% of children and staff had done that, or students and staff. So we had got through nearly everybody. There was a residual few, and many of those were actually receiving direct support. And there were just a few who we hadn't been able to get hold of.
Okay.
And further efforts were being made to do that.
So are you saying then, that it was just really bad luck that some of those people that you were unable to contact happened to be people who were infected?
Oh, look, you can't rely on luck with this virus, so I don't think it was bad luck, it was just that's what happened.
By that stage, Papatoetoe High School had been in full response mode after case A had tested positive more than a week before, with numerous communications going out to students, staff and family.
I'm confident we communicated it clearly. I've seen the records of the multiple communication that went to members of the school community, advising them of what was required of both students and wider household contacts. But look, obviously in this case, despite that communication over what was expected, that has not occurred here. We have a test though, and ultimately we need that test to make sure that we are not putting other people at risk. And so I don't want to create an environment where an individual who has made mistakes here gets so pilloried that no one wants to be tested. That's not a healthy environment for anyone.
By Monday, the attitude from the Beehive podium had hardened.
Even with the full understanding of human fallibility, it is not appropriate and it is not okay for members of the team of 5 million to let the rest of us down. Prosecution is a matter for police, not politicians. But it's always been my view that New Zealanders' success in beating this virus has been based on high rates of compliance and low rates of tolerance for rule breaking, because we all understand what is required of us. I think this is because we appreciate, as I said yesterday, that this virus can mean life or death. It is a virus that kills.
Ms. Ardern was then pushed on exactly what would happen to people if found to have knowingly defied orders to isolate or get tested.
First thing I would say is that no one in Cabinet, no minister, no politician, none of us that I've spoken to, think that this is tolerable. You know, what has happened here has been a clear breach and everyone is frustrated by it. The distinction we've simply made is that politicians aren't the ones that determine enforcement, and that's rightly so. But the provisions exist, so if the question is why isn't it, the provisions do exist, so people are able to be...
Are you sending a message to the police that you would like to see these breaches?
No, just look, just as if something is before the courts or there's a question mark over whether someone should be arrested or prosecuted, we rightly so have the independence between politicians and police, and I need to maintain that. But no one is accepting here that these breaches are okay. They were not. Plainly, everyone is paying the price.
In a situation like Papatoetoe High School, Dr. Bloomfield says there's very close management and communications with active cases, their families and close contacts.
Clearly, it's really important that people are expected to, and we need to have isolating, are isolating. That's why there is the daily phone call. That is to check on symptoms, have they got the support they need, and of course to check that they are where they are expected to be. If we cannot contact them, then we have a team that goes around. Usually it's the local provider, Māori or Pacific provider, or one of our community providers, or the public health team will go around. If they need support from police because they can't find people, then we absolutely involve the police. So we've worked closely with the police right throughout. If we cannot find someone who we need to find, then we don't hesitate to involve and call on the police.
Outside of when they're in a managed situation, like case M, for example, they're not obviously being actively managed by the officials, but they're breaking the rules that they should know.
Yeah.
And what message is there for people like that, that there may be consequences, if that's the deterrent?
If there is any question mark right now over there being consequences, you know, those individuals are facing the full judgment of the entire nation. There are consequences, undoubtedly. But whether or not a decision is made to fine or prosecute, that decision sits with the police.
National's Chris Bishop noted the shift in tone from the Prime Minister,
who said on Saturday night that she didn't want to apportion blame, and now is saying that the weight of judgment of the whole of New Zealand is coming down on these people who have broken the rules. So she's clearly trying to distract us from really what's a systems failure at the heart of the government response here. We should be checking on people. We should be doing spot checks. We should be making sure they are where they say they are. And we should be enforcing sanctions and consequences for people who are breaking those rules.
ACT leader David Seymour says it's a complex situation.
It's very challenging because the more you punish people, the fewer people come forward. It can be counterproductive to punish people. What is needed is much better monitoring. You know, in Taiwan they use cell phone tower triangulation to locate people and they check up on you if you go to the wrong place. If you have better information and better enforcement, you don't need to punish people. If you don't punish people, you don't scare them away from coming forward in the first place.
Dr. Bloomfield was asked why health officials weren't pursuing people who'd breached the rules.
Everybody understands that taking a sort of a prosecutorial approach and potentially, you know, taking people to court could well be counterproductive. It could deter people from actually being tested and coming forward. And that clearly is not in anyone's interest. So, look, I can't imagine the stress that these people feel at the moment. In fact, I saw a story this morning. They feel the weight of the nation on their shoulders. I think they have a good sense of the fact that what they did didn't actually comply with what they should have been doing. I would be very reluctant to do anything that could actually deter people from coming forward and being tested. We need to actually all be in this together, and people being tested is fundamental to us being able to respond effectively.
Policing the pandemic, like everything else, is not straightforward. The police enforce the alert level rules, making sure people are where they're supposed to be, not gathering in numbers larger than allowed, monitoring the checkpoints on the regional borders, and making sure people aren't coming or going when they're not supposed to. However, when it comes to dealing with individuals or families and requiring them to isolate or get tested, that's firmly in the hands of health officials, under incredibly strong powers they're given to respond to an epidemic. Police have prosecuted nearly 1,000 COVID-related breaches, but it's not always up to them to pursue a suspected offence, as Commissioner Andrew Costa explains.
We do have a role in support of public health if there are situations like specific directions given under the legislation for people to isolate. However, our role in that kicks in at the point public health notifies us that a direction was given that may have been breached.
Because a lot of the prosecutions are under the Health Act, so would they be for the likes of someone told to isolate but haven't and you'd be called in, or what would the nature of those charges be?
Yes, if we've had people who, particularly in the early stages where isolation was occurring at home, we didn't have the MIQ in places for people to isolate, then we've had various situations of breaches like that. It may be people who have been directed not to continue gathering in a large group and have continued to do that after being told to disperse. That's probably the most common scenario that we've struck.
And so when you were talking about the MIQ ones, that would have been solved to a degree by having the MIQ facilities now?
Well, that's right. Where people are placed into an isolation facility, then we don't need to be checking on them because they are contained in there. The scenarios that we've seen more recently appear to have been cases where people have not tested positive, but they have been directed to isolate and then have not done that. However, the basis for our investigation is evidence of what direction was given so that we can undertake any enforcement activity. And the Director General has been really clear about his view, which is there's a greater interest in people speaking honestly about what they've done and where they've been, and the concern that prosecution may discourage that honesty. So public health has not so far referred any of those breaches to us.
So there have been no prosecutions against anyone who's been directed to self-isolate and hasn't through the police?
Not in terms of any recent cases that I'm aware of. So particularly the events leading to this lockdown have been the subject of a lot of commentary. We have not received a referral or evidence about what direction was given in order to investigate a breach.
From a law enforcement perspective, do you think the right balance is being struck between the laws that are in place and the compliance from the general population?
We've mostly seen incredibly good compliance across our communities, and that's why New Zealand has been so successful, I would suggest. And that compliance is a careful balancing between getting people to do the right thing because it's the right thing and we're all in the same boat, and then knowing that enforcement action would be taken if people breach. Ultimately, this is a pandemic. It's a health-related thing, and public health physicians and experts are best placed to know what works to control these things. Police play a supporting role, but it's a little bit outside the range of our normal area of operation, which is more focused on criminal offences.
The other point of contention this week was the status of the laws being used to enforce these heavily intrusive requirements. The COVID-19 Public Response Health Act is triggered when ministers order a lockdown, and alongside that, while there's a state of emergency or epidemic notice in place, senior health officials have extraordinary powers to respond under the Health Act 1956. Furthermore, health orders can be issued, giving very specific directives to individuals or groups of people. The most recent one was the order covering Papatoetoe High School. Dr. Dean Knight from Victoria University says the government needs to make sure there's a clear line between public health advice and strict legal requirements.
I think this is an issue that the government is sweating deeply. They're taking a lot more care nowadays to separate out the statement of the hard legal obligations are reflected in a COVID order or a health order, and the statement of precautions that are just the right thing to do or the good thing to do or what they expect of people.
How much responsibility then is it on the government to make sure that people know there are criminal consequences for some of the things that they're being asked to do?
It's difficult because the pandemic is a fast-moving feast. So the nature of the obligations, especially over the last couple of months, have changed almost, in some cases, day by day. We've had alert levels elevate and recede. We also had those more bespoke and more targeted Section 70 orders being issued. It's important that those obligations are conveyed in general terms to the people affected by them. The law doesn't expect everybody to be, you know, doing their homework and studying up on the legislation website to find out what clause, you know, 4C says or things like that. But it does expect that when you're a member of a community that you've got your eyes open to what the obligations being expected of you. But the quid pro quo on that is that the law also will try and make sure that the obligations have been appropriately communicated to people before they're held legally responsible for those in criminal settings. And that question of what is appropriately communicated is always going to be a little bit of a tricky one, depending on some very different circumstances that people face in their day-to-day lives.
That's Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson. Thanks for joining us. Mā te wā.